Preparedness and Ocean Policy. I don't look like Representative Boone, who chairs this meeting, I know, but she is with us. She is available on the speakerphone.
She's a lot cuter.
I wouldn't go that far. Unfortunately, fighting some problems that prevent her from driving over here today, so bear with me and we will get through this process. Thanks for joining us, Representative Boone.
And thank you so much for chairing this meeting. Being the vice chair is very valuable. Thank you.
You're very welcome. With that, we're going to move to discussion, first of all, of legislative concept 61. And we're also trying to respect the time of individuals who are running back and forth between two rooms today. So if I could ask Paul Evans and Kelly Skye to come forward. Thank you and good morning. I'm going to let you walk us through LC 61 and where we are at this particular point in time, if you would, please.
Thank you, Chairwoman. For the record, my name is Paul Evans. I'm a policy advisor to Governor Kulongoski, and with me is
Kelly Skye, and I'm Governor Kulongoski's general counsel.
Thank you. And if I could stop you for just one moment for a sound check. Are you able to hear them okay, Representative?
Yeah, if they'll speak up a little tiny bit, and they couldn't go much lower, put it that way. Thank you.
Okay. You have your directions.
Madam Chair, thank you.
That's good.
My comments there are really pretty brief. The proposal we have in front of us has to do with making sure that we have all of our bases covered for times of an emergency. It's an agreement that is very common sense and very much needed because of the Eugene Games coming up this year and the Olympics coming up in British Columbia in just a short while. There, we've had discussions with legal counsel, and the position that we have right now really is whatever way is best to codify it works really for us. The goal is to make sure that after the February session that we have this compact in place so that if trouble comes, we can help each other, and if we need help, we can be helped, and that we maximize every potential tool before an emergency, and because as we've learned again in December 2007, you never know when it's going to hit. So it's one of those things that we thought had been handled, but we need to get it codified and put into legislation, and really that's the position.
If I could just summarize some of your background information for anyone who might be listening in. Essentially, this is an international version of the Emergency Mutual Aid Compact.
Yes, ma'am.
The kinds of mutual aid compacts that we work with all the time, this is the international piece of it. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes. Basically, the only difference between this and something like EMAC, which is the way in which California, for instance, got help during the recent fires, is that this includes an international component because we do live in a region and British Columbia, the Yukon, and some other areas are close enough that we can share assets. This is one of those things that is actually quite common at local governments where you have regional governments that kind of sign an agreement that they'll help each other out during times of need.
Sure.
This simply does the same thing for the state as part of a larger region. And again, it's one of those things that I doubt seriously that we'll probably need to call on British Columbia to send something, but you never know. And it makes sense to have it in place so that if something does pop up and they have a particular asset or a particular person that's trained in a certain way, that there's no legal issues in trying to get that assistance.
Madam Chair, how are the other entities that are involved in this implementing, and are they doing it by statute? I think that's something similar within their framework of law to give them, you know, the same authority.
Representative Krieger, Madam Chair, I think every state has different authorities for their chief executive to be able to sign on to commitments such as this. I can't answer what other states do. What I suppose is that whatever ratification process is the normal means that they follow that. In this particular case, I believe the governor's actually already signed it. It was upon the second reading that it was presented that that there were some fiscal attachments to it that needed to go through the legislature. So I really don't know what specific policies are in place for other states. I do know that it's one of those things that every state is trying to get done because of the upcoming events.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If we've done it and they haven't, I'm kind of just interested whether or not they've actually done something similar already, or are they in the process of going to be doing it in the near future. Mm-hmm. If you don't know that, just get us the information that we know that, hey, everybody's signed, everybody's on board, everybody's got some type of legislation or law or agreement that's been accepted state.
Sure. Representative Krieger, Madam Chair, we actually believe we're the last to sign, but we'll get that information for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Very briefly, I support this completely, and I'm interested to hear the answer to Representative Krieger's question too. But just speaking from a layman's perspective here, there's something in here that covers us. We're not going to be left on the hook if we do respond or if we feel we can't respond. Correct?
Representative Schaffer, Madam Chair, yes, absolutely.
Good morning, and welcome, Representative Nelson.
Thank you
for your information. The chair is on the phone.
Oh, good.
Hi, Donna.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm glad you're there.
Good.
Thanks.
Glad you're here.
Okay. Oh. Good morning, Chair Cowan, members of the committee. I actually just came to address the letter that you all received from Legislative Council, and I spoke with Harrison Connolly on Friday about that letter, and we're really not in conflict at all. We only asked that the legislature codify Annex B to this agreement because Annex B is actually the operational portion of the agreement. The original agreement is somewhat aspirational. It says that that each of these territories and states agrees to aid each other, but it doesn't give the details of how that will happen. So the original agreement, it doesn't actually provide you anything extra by codifying it. However, Harrison Connolly felt that it would be good to provide the context from where Annex B came. And so I don't have an objection to that. I think if Legislative Council feels that that context is needed in statute, they're the experts, they write the statute. So we will definitely defer to Legislative Council on that.
Maybe we could ask Harrison to join us, if you would, please. Thank you. I think I'm going to display my ignorance here and ask that between this threesome in front of us at the moment, we put in English what's in this letter and what we need to do to make this work. I want it to work. Whomever wants to jump in.
Vice Chair Cowan, members, Harrison Connolly from the Office of Legislative Counsel. As I think has been represented here already, it's not at all clear to me that we have a legal problem if we do not include the original agreement or the previous annex. It just struck me that there was a lot of value in having the whole agreement in front of us. That, you know, you look up at something that's called Annex B and you do sort of scratch your head. Well, where is the original agreement? What is this a part of? How does it work in context? I think it's been accurately represented here that the original agreement is largely aspirational. It has been in effect since 1996 or 97. All of the states have signed on to that. As has been represented, it is my understanding that we are the last state to sign on to this implementing procedures for that original agreement. The agreement essentially, when you have an international compact like this, or even an interstate compact, we don't at this point get to really modify the agreement or change it. It means what it means, so we either buy into it or we don't. I think that's the case here. If we buy into these implementing procedures, we buy into this document. But still, for context, it strikes me that it is appropriate to have the whole document in front of a person at any given time.
Understood.
Representative Shockley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So just referencing it in one sentence or whatever is not adequate. You want the whole document placed into the statute. Is that correct?
That is
that going to be necessary, or do you just feel more comfortable with that?
Vice Chair Cowan, Representative Schaffler, as I think I indicated, it is not clear to me that we would have a legal problem from not modifying this document as presented. I think this would be legally adequate.
Then follow up, Madam Chair. Then do you see no advantages or disadvantages or benefits or one way or the other? I mean, if we have to, we should. If we don't, we shouldn't. Or, excuse me, if we don't have to, then why should we? Not that we shouldn't.
Vice Chair Cowan, Representative Schaffler, my answer essentially is, again, you look at this document and it starts in, this is Annex B to something. Where do you find that something? Well, you know, in this modern age, we can Google and you can pretty well find it out there somewhere, but it seems to me that it's most appropriate to be able to find it along with this portion of the agreement.
Okay. Thank you.
I have enough trouble finding these when they're together. So if it isn't together, I agree. Put it all together.
That's what I think.
And just to clarify once more, from the governor's office perspective, you have no objection to putting Annex A in here also?
Yes, Chair Cowan, that is correct.
And the process for doing that?
Vice Chair Cowan, at this point, I believe that process would be that you would go ahead and adopt this today, and I would provide you an amendment that probably would add to this.
That's what I was hoping you were going to say. Thank you. Are there any other questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Anyone else that's interested in testifying on this particular issue?
Would it be cleaner to go to work session on this one, I think?
I think so, yeah. Okay, seeing no other interested parties on this particular issue, I will close the public hearing on LC 61 and open a work session on LC 61.
Madam Chair, do you want your motion now?
I believe so.
Madam Chair, I move that LC 61 be recommended for introduction at the February 2-8 special session.
Representative Krieger moves that LC 61 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 session. Any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to compliment Mr. Connolly for being so conscientious and excellent in what he does, and I think it's the right thing to do is to add the annex as this. He's called.
Thank you. I appreciate you keeping us on track and remembering to do that. Chair Boone, do you have any discussion on this?
No, I was actually going to do that, and Rep. Nelson beat me to it. Thank you so much. And I'm whatever it takes, you know. I'm up for it. This sounds great.
Well, I'm certainly hearing no objection to that amendment being offered.
Great.
And with that, could we call the roll, please?
Aye.
Representative
Schaffler? Aye. Vice Chair Cowan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Chair Boone?
Aye.
Thank you.
Chair, just one more question, please. And then, is our desires then sufficient for Harrison to go ahead and draft the amendment now? He doesn't need any more to go ahead and start that.
I see head nodding in the back of the room that without objection he's
okay.
Got enough.
Okay.
Is
all
that
right.
Correct?
Very good.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
Yes.
With that, I will declare approved LC 61 and close the work session. Getting directions here. I hit it. I just, okay, now I get to do it again. To open a public hearing on LC 89. Chair Boone?
Yes.
I'm going to leave the room to make copies of the governor's email.
Okay.
So you folks can discuss.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Thank you, Sandy.
I will try not to get myself in trouble in the time she's away.
You're doing great.
All right. We are moving now to a discussion of LC 89, which deals with the conversation about potentially developing a limited system of marine reserves off the Oregon coast. And I'm going to ask if Chair Boone would like to make an introductory comment into this conversation before we open
the
public hearing.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Just a tiny bit of background. When we started discussions on this special session coming up in 2008, and we knew that we were only having one committee bill per committee, or one bill per committee, with the possibility, and this is in the House only, of an additional bill if necessary, if it met the criteria of emergency, et cetera, couldn't wait. And I was asked early on by our governor's office if we would accommodate them with the PNEMA bill, which I agreed to do, because he wasn't given a certain amount of bills that he could introduce. He was kind of left to call on his friends and committees, et cetera, to help pass whatever legislation he might want to do for 2008. So I was happy to do that, and thank my committee for agreeing to do that also. But we did want to have a bill from our committee, and it was looking like, after spending most of the year since Sine Die of the 2007 session traveling up and down the coast on the discussion of marine reserve, that the governor had also had set out an initiative to do through OPAC, Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, and it pretty much took up most of my time. And it became evident to me after attending many, many meetings up and down the coast, hearing from my colleagues in my coastal caucus, of which I'm the chair, that they were concerned about process, et cetera. And so in order to hopefully, shepherd this concept through in a way that was comfortable for people on the coast and people in the governor's office who were charged with this duty, I decided that it might be a good idea to have a bill ready that would address marine reserves, and just to provide a little backup to OPAC if they should need it in any way, if they needed something to be done legislatively, et cetera, because part of the issue along the coast was the concern that there was no funding for this process. And I mean, we could talk a long time about a lot of the concerns and everything, which I won't do right now, but that's one of the main things, because most of these people are volunteer, and there was a lot of work being charged to them, on their own dime and on their own time. So that was one concern we thought about. The other was how the system of marine reserves or marine protected areas would be chosen. And there's, an existing in the OPAC, a scientific and technical advisory committee called the STAC, and it's made up of scientists and technicians, obviously, and they provide the factual, scientific factual stuff and the research-related issue information. The other piece of it, there was a big call along the coast for the local people who live in coastal communities and work in these communities to be able to be the ones to choose the locations if they're going to be established that won't significantly or won't impact their socioeconomic back in the district and up and down the coast. Fishermen and coastal communities, residents and business people in the coastal communities have been inundated with requests for all kinds of additional uses in the ocean besides fishing and, the fishing industry, put it that way, and recreational use, et cetera. And they were concerned also that each of these additional requests, and for example, wave energy, et cetera, open ocean aquaculture and now marine reserves and protected areas, were not considering each other and their related demands on the systems, if you will. And so they're very concerned about more and more ocean property being locked down and not fishing not allowed, etc. So there were a series of resolutions, etc., forwarded by coastal communities, local governments and entities, port districts, etc., commenting on these reserves, etc., and what they thought. Some of them didn't want them at all. Some of them wanted very high and tight sideboards on them, and some wanted the initial question asked, you know, do we need them or why do we need them, answered before they were put in place. And then on top of all this was the upcoming session in 08 and the need for the governor, if he wants to do this, in order to fund them, he was going to have to do something and get it in place prior to the 09 session to ask the legislature for funding for this. So it became a little evident that this had to happen in 08. And this bill really is utilizing language, and I don't know if Dave Hendricks is there. He's the point person from LC at this point because Doug Tukey's in Kazakhstan the next 4 months. And they've drafted it together utilizing existing OPAC language and existing statute and existing comments from our governor regarding this issue to make a pretty broad bill that would allow, and this is with the understanding that we knew we were going to have people wanting this or that added or taken away or whatever, but we wanted something that we could go forward with in 08 that would help establish some sort of baseline on this. And some of it was when it was being drafted, at the same time, almost simultaneously, OPAC was acting on, for example, the request or the piece in the bill that calls for an outreach program, and that would be run by the Oregon Sea Grant. And at the time the bill was being drafted, we didn't know if we'd have that, so I put it in it just in case to cover all bases. And it turns out that OPAC, in this last week in Astoria meetings, adopted the outreach, public outreach program to be run by Sea Grant. And so that is going to happen. And there was what they are and how they're adopted. There's reference in it to the plans, the existing Ocean Resources Management Plan and the Oregon Territorial Sea Plan. Also at the OPAC meeting in Astoria last week, there was a subcommittee formed that will take up the question of, you know, if we're going to change the sea plans, et cetera, then we need an advisory on this, and that's exactly what they're doing, because the existing plan, which is supposed to be updated regularly, periodically by OPAC, hasn't been done for a few years and does not account for wave energy right now or marine reserves. So it's very timely. It is running parallel with what OPAC is doing. And I think that it will also address the final thing I wanted to add was in the last 2 weeks, I have received four, because I can't find it, it's in my email somewhere, comments and resolutions passed by, and so far only in my district, in Tillamook County, and a couple of local fishing groups that were pretty much against doing the marine reserves in the first place, but they've come a little bit toward the middle of the issue by saying we will be more willing to work with this issue coming forward, because it's coming forward, if we can have this run through the purview of the legislature. So it's all in concert with that. I think it's, you know, it's very timely. Everything kind of happens at the same time, which is good in that sense. And I guess I'll stop there if anybody has any questions.
Okay, thank you for giving us the overview.
Long history there, but
no, you're the one that's worked with this so closely, and I think that was helpful to have the summary.
I think I'm not seeing any burning questions for you right at the moment, okay. So let's move into public testimony, and then we'll see where we go from there. So I would call first Fred Van Natta, followed by Paul Claren and John Griffith, just so you'll be ready. Good morning,
I am
sir.
Fred Van Natta, appearing before you on behalf of Oregon Anglers, a sports fishing group in Oregon.
Just a vocal check here. Can you hear him okay, Rip?
Yeah, I can.
Okay,
yep.
Good. Perfect.
My testimony was prepared without the benefit of the language in LC89. I will present my testimony, and then I will comment specifically on some things that I believe are of interest in the specific language in LC89. Fishermen and women want at best expanded numbers and better opportunity to catch fish. At worst, they want no reduction in fishing opportunities. Marine reserves, as proposed, are a clear reduction in fishing opportunity. No thoughtful fisherperson would sign on to support the present rush to marine reserves. There's no analysis of existing stocks, no goals to be achieved by the reserves, no benchmarks to measure their success or failure, and no money to deal with any of these issues. Proponents promise the more area designated for no fishing, the more fish there will be. As presently proposed, marine reserves promise only one thing to the sports and commercial fishing community, an assured reduction in fishing opportunities. We should turn our attention to a simple five-point program. First, map and inventory the territorial sea. With the talent at OSU, the expertise at the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the support of the fishing community and Oregon's political establishment, a comprehensive world-class inventory of our sea life could be compiled. Two, identify resources and values important to be preserved. We could identify species that are overfished in areas where, if protected, their numbers might recover. Three, put in place a monitoring system to determine the sustainability of these resources and values. We could establish systems to measure recovery. Four, create measuring benchmarks for these resources and values. We could agree on what recovery is, and we could work together to achieve it. Five, then develop the regulatory system, including reserves if they help, to protect the resources and values. This five-point program, to the degree it enhances fishing stocks, which is what marine reserve advocates are promising the fishing community, would receive strong support from the fishing community. The pell-mell rush to draw the lines in the sand, or maybe it's rock, is a practical and political disaster. The legislative body simply must insist this issue be approached responsibly. A program to undertake the steps outlined here would be welcomed by the fishing community and thoughtful environmental interests. It's not too late to deal with the marine reserve issue in a constructive approach. Now, the bill that is outlined here, I think, sets up the framework for incorporating the principles that we have suggested here. If I may turn specifically to the measure and reference the principles set forth in the testimony here, if you turn to Section 3, Sub 2, amendments that propose to establish a marine reserve.
Just to clarify for folks, that's on page 2, line 22. Thank you.
That is correct. Page 2, line 22. Amendments that propose to establish a marine reserve or marine protected area must, and I haven't tried to rewrite all of that, but the key thing that isn't incorporated or implied in the language that here is the initial inventory. And if we don't do an initial inventory of marine life and resources, we can't tell, we have no benchmark to figure out whether marine reserves are helping or hurting our marine resources. And I would encourage the committee to rewrite that section to provide for the initial inventory and the concept of identifying why we're having what is our goal in establishing the marine reserves, so we can figure out whether they're helping us or hurting us. The concept is that we go forward and do marine reserves in the abstract because we believe they're good. Now, I want to go back and nitpick or ask some questions about the Section 1, Sub 3, but you'll find the language I'm about to speak to on the line 1 in on page 2, where that speaks to apparently marine protected areas in sub 3 and marine reserves in sub 4. And as I read it, it appears that a marine protected area is something forever. And I don't know whether that's the intent or not, but you'll see in line 1, has been reserved provide lasting protection. And I think if it is your intent that a marine protected area is something that is forevermore once designated, I think that needs to be clarified, and people will react differently to it however you answer the question, but it appears to be ambiguous as drafted. But that's the only reason I could think of why you would have a marine protected area in one subsection and a marine reserve in the other, is that one is permanent and the other might be temporary. So I'd like to put that on the record and get an answer somewhere.
And I think that, I'll cut in here for just a second, Fred. I think that is to provide a basic definition. And those were taken out of, is David there?
Can you speak?
No. Okay. And Rep Schaffer has a question, okay, too, here.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Van Etta, thank you, and I think you've raised some valid concerns, and I share them. Have you had the benefit of reading this email from Mr. Carrier to Representative Boone that was sent out this weekend?
I've had it for, the staff was kind enough to provide it to me momentarily ago.
All right.
And I haven't, I'm not sure, I'm not sure I'm prepared to comment thoughtfully on it, because the significant thing I can see there is don't limit it to 9, but beyond that, I wasn't sure whether there are other major difficulties or not, but that one I observed. The second comment I have, in addition to the question of are we talking about permanent and temporary, arrives on page 2, line 6, where we're talking about marine reserves, where it says talks about disturbance of living and non-living marine resources. To read the whole sentence, in which biological resources are protected through prohibitions on fishing and on the removal or disturbance of living and non-living marine resources, except as necessary for monitoring, research, and evaluation of the effectiveness of the marine reserve. That appears to me to prohibit folks from driving their boat through a marine reserve. And one of the concerns that fishermen certainly have had is whether if the reserves are located between a port and an open fishing ground, you could be adding significant mileage to getting to your fishing ground if you've got to drive around the marine reserves. And that language, disturbance of living or non-living marine resources, I don't have to be a lawyer to know that if they want to prohibit travel on it, that language would allow them to prohibit travel. And I just want to put the issue on the table here and make and see what your intent is in drafting the language.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, we could scrutinize this for probably an hour or two. I did get the copy from our Chair Boone, read this draft. There are numerous things that are not acceptable to me. For instance, the fishing. 3534 specifically says that the recommendation from OPAC isn't to deal with fishing or not. That's up to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So right away, somebody's trying to circumvent what was in that bill. We are not going to allow that. I don't believe it's a coastal caucus. So there's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of wordsmithing to do. And then when I see this letter here, or this, yeah, from the governor's staff, that raises some more, you know, all of a sudden now, he isn't going to support a bill that limits it to 9 reserves. He wants more maybe later. And maybe that's going to put us off for another 2 years of ever getting to an agreement. Just that sentence alone, I mean, it really gripes me. I could use some real strong adjectives.
That'll work.
But, you know, the governor's staff has drugged their feet for 5 years. 5 years I've been in this building, and they've been dragging their feet, showing no leadership, and we get a letter like this. That's an insult to this committee. We shouldn't tolerate it for a minute. But I will say, I appreciate the fact that the governor has put John Griffith on OPAC. I think they're going to find out that if you have a cup of coffee and you start talking about ideas, he'll be a very constructive partner for them. I think the Environmental Committee will find that out. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. I think what we need to do is clarify a couple of things here. Donna, excuse me. Could I finish my thought process in the draft? I didn't catch you in my side view here. I think it's fair to the public who might be listening in that they have some idea of what we're referencing here as we continue to talk about a letter from Mr. Carrier, and it essentially raises some concerns about language in Section 3, Line 1, as to whether we should be talking about Oregon Ocean Resource Management Plan or the Territorial Sea Plan, which I'm going to have to plead enough ignorance that I'll have to do a little more research as to whether one is outdated and what the appropriate language in that kind of conversation is. There's also some question raised about the limit to 9 reserves not being something that he at this point would like to see as a statutory limit. In other words, meaning that down the road perhaps that might want to be considered as a they might want to be considered for additional ones if the first set work, and some other questions about specific language. So what I wanted to say at this point is that, with all due respect, I appreciate your testimony, Mr. Granata, and I don't think that we're in a position here today to respond to it. The hope is that without significant change, we'll be able to move this draft forward to move it into an actual bill that we could take up in the hearing process, and any amendments to it will be considered in the hearing process during the sessions in hearing. During the hearings as part of our February session. Let me try to get my tongue around that particular line there. Oh, well. But because, as Representative Boone mentioned, there's been some pretty significant progress and movement within the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, or OPAC, and some new committees formed, and a lot more conversation in this development. I think that many of the ideas, I was interested in how closely your basic presentation followed some of the concepts that were written into this bill. So I think that a lot of those ideas will get fleshed out as the OPEC process moves forward and we move forward with more conversation about this bill during session. So, and with that, and apologies for not having good peripheral vision, I'd like to recognize Representative Nelson.
No problem. Madam Chair, before I heard Mr. Veneta's testimony, I had already written 9 question mark on the very top of the draft. And where did 9 come from to begin with?
I can answer that question for you. The early part of November, I think it was actually on November 1st, that the governor invited a group of representatives from the fishing community to meet with him and talk to him about this particular issue. The Coastal Caucus members sat in on the meeting as observers, and those who spoke with the governor voiced where their concerns were around protections for our coastal economy's economic well-being. And subsequent to that meeting, the governor sent a letter out to all of the folks that were in attendance saying that he intended this to be a limited system of no more than 10, which has sort of been translated to 9, and
so there's no specific
conversation
for it.
The reason is that it came out in that letter, and that's pretty well been what everybody has kind of got their arms around at this point.
May I continue?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Veneta, were you at that meeting?
Pardon?
Were you at that meeting?
No, I was not.
Okay. And since I'm not on the coast, even though I have been a Northwest Steelheader, could I just ask on page 2, where you go kind of the line 7, have we a definition of what we call living and non-living marine resources? Is there a
I'm sure
detailed definition somewhere? I think that is very critical to what we're talking about.
There may very well be one somewhere. It is part of the discussion process that's going on at OPEC.
And one last question,
yes,
if
ma'am.
I could, please. Where it talks about, just in the summary of the draft, it talks about avoiding economic and or social impacts,
mm-hmm.
small enough and large enough. Do we define those? I mean, what, like when we're talking about social impacts, one of them would be boating. I mean, a social activity that's occurring. So we want to avoid, you know, impact in that activity. Have we also defined what we think those are?
Again, that is part of a conversation that's going on at OPEC. There's always challenges around interpreting the data, and they've been working on it for some time. I think that the major thrust and desire of this bill is to support and move forward that kind of in-depth conversation that's going on at OPEC, and also to make sure
OPEC
that
for me, so I
OPEC, Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, it's an A there, and also to assure that there is a legislative role in this conversation as it moves forward. We may be moving a little bit off of this particular individual's testimony, but hopefully we've answered a few of your questions as we move forward. I have Representative Schaffler and Representative Krieger, and I think my question is, do you have a question for this individual?
I just have a comment related to this, but it's far more detailed than his. First of all, I'd like to, too, on the record, thank the governor for seeing fit to the point of Mr. Griffith, who I haven't met before. I don't remember, but
you will momentarily.
Yeah, I understand that. So I think that's good, and that's positive. I have been discussing this issue with my friend from the southern coast for several years in this building, too. And I read this over the weekend, and I think this, I will support a draft for a bill. I have no problem doing that today. But this bill needs a lot of, this draft has a lot of work to do, as it is now. And Mr. Veneta has pointed out some of the things that need to be clarified and put in place and maybe changed a bit. Definitely changed a bit, in my opinion. I, too, share a great concern about this email here. The heaviest weight for this kind of bill, this kind of legislation, the weighted opinion should be the men and women and families that live and work on that coast, not the legislature, not the governor, in my humble opinion. I think we need to have legislative oversight. we're going to provide money for it, and I think we need to have our input in there as well. But in the end, this will have an impact, a direct impact, on the men and women families that live and work on that coast. And that weighs way more than anything we do in this building, in my humble opinion. So I have a lot of reservations. I will support a draft, but this is going to take a lot of work before it gets my vote. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you for your patience.
And I appreciate that, Representative Schaufler, and that's exactly what I wanted to hear from committee people, is some of your comments coming in now, but more of them and more fleshing out of some of these things as we work forward with OPAC on this. I think that everybody has a place at the table here, and that's kind of my intent, was, you know, get it going, and then we'll be working it very diligently and during the process. We've got 4 weeks in February, and hopefully coming out with something that's acceptable to most people. We know we'll never make everybody super happy, but you know, that's what collaboration is all about.
Representative Krieger, did you have a question?
Not a question, just a comment that he might be of value. Friday they had the Oregon Coastal Zone Management meeting in Brookings. 40 people showed up. I think there were two or three OPAC members there, county commissioners, mayors, commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, newspaper people, around 40, 45. And we had about an hour and a half conversation regarding marine reserves, separate from the fact that John was being put on OPAC. And they asked me to comment on this bill, which I did not specifically do because the chair had asked me not to until we got here today. But I did advise them that they would be able to have access to that bill by Monday or before, and that they needed to read it very, very carefully and scrutinize it up against 3534, and what does it do and what doesn't it do, and what are their suggestions. And so I think you're going to get a lot of input from Oregon Coastal Zone on a Hoosing, as was one of the people present. We actually drafted the bill, John Griffith, myself, Ono, Mike Carrier, and then Jim Myron from the governor's office. So as Representative Schaufler has said, this is almost like a placeholder. You know you're going to have a bill, maybe, if it's needed, but this isn't what's going to be in it. So I think we have a tendency to, like I do, sometimes jump up and down and scream and shout, but this isn't what we're going to be dealing with. There's going to be a lot of work done if we get anything out of it. And there needs to be a lot of input from the coastal communities, the affected people. And both the governor's statement twice, the bill itself talks about an economic impact, economic analysis that has to be done. You don't do those things in just a couple of months. That could be a year's project there alone. And the recommendation doesn't go to Wayne Krieger, it doesn't go to the governor. The recommendation of OPAC goes to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And it specifically says in 3534, they are not to make recommendations on fishing. But yet this bill starts to do that, and that's why it's not acceptable. That's one of the things that's not acceptable. The permanent issue you talked about earlier, that's not acceptable. So there's going to have to be some real conversations, and people are going to have to sit down at the table and have a cup of coffee and say, hey, what are we trying to do? How are we going to get there? And one of the overreaching things I've heard at the last two OPAC meetings with fishermen groups and at Oregon Coastal Zone, what are we doing this for? You don't need to do it for fish enhancement. There's all kinds of rules and regulations, open, closed season areas, all that you could do. You could manage it to the existing framework of regulations to get to where you wanted to go. You don't need to do it. The value, the only value that I see in it, is ocean marine research. When I did House Bill 3108 the same year, those extra poundage fees from the live fish fishery were really up high, and I did that because I wanted that money to be dedicated, which I did, to marine research. It's hard to regulate and manage a source as big as the ocean when we really don't know that much about it. Therefore, we have to manage it oftentimes very conservatively because we don't want to have an adverse impact that we're not aware that we're doing. So I really strongly support the concept that if we're going to do this, that the focus be on marine research, and that means the legislature is going to have to step up with some dollars plus some grant money that can come in.
Can I ask the staff to work with Representative Krieger to make sure we get the right year, et cetera, but get copies of those pieces of legislation to committee members so that we can refer to them?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I may, yes, Madam Chair, I have just two final points.
Okay.
One more.
Could you identify yourself one more time for the record?
Yeah, Fred Venata, still on the record. On page 3 on the bill, line 4 and 5, where it speaks to but not limited to significant loss of commercial fishing opportunities, as a representative of sports fishing, I would either ask you strike the word commercial or you insert sports fishing into the formula as well. And that gives you some initial reaction of our initial reaction to the legislation as drafted. The other point I want to make is, and I may be seeing ghosts, but I've been in the building long enough that when I think I see a ghost, sometimes there's real life there. In California, special interests in some cases have stepped in and helped finance ocean reserves. I have heard rumors that there may be special interest money available in Oregon for the marine protected areas or ocean reserves. If their special interest money comes in Oregon, we should establish a principle that people that put special interest money in ocean reserves don't then get to run the reserves. If special interest money comes in Oregon, we ought to take it and put it in the ODF&W's budget and let ODF&W use it for the ocean reserves, but it's done under the laws of the state of Oregon and done by ODF&W, and that there's no and that the people that bring that special interest money to the table don't have any special say about what happens in the ocean reserve areas.
Representative Krieger?
I'm glad you, Fred, brought that up, because that has come up recently. And I wholeheartedly agree that you do not want to have a special interest fund something that should be funded by the citizens of Oregon if it's that important to start with. And to have any validity of the science that's developed, you don't want to have it coming from just the environmental side. I want it to be under the auspices of a state agency with some peer review and get the very best science we can, so whatever we get, we can believe it. We've got confidence in it. If that doesn't happen, then all that money is going to be spent for nothing, because it's going to be just as much of an argument about whether or not the science really says what it was, or was it doctored to meet the agenda of special interest groups. And that has happened, by the way, in other places.
It has, Representative Krieger. We are aware of those cases.
Okay. Thank you for...
Very briefly. Thank you. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. These reserves are going to be managed by the state of Oregon, I'll grant you that, but with the heavy weighted opinion from the people that live there, not some outside entity. I couldn't agree more. I refuse to support handing any control this over to anybody but Fish and Wildlife and the people of Oregon. So I just wanted to, that's the intention of this representative, and I've heard it down there at the other end of the dais too, so I wanted to make clear my support of not doing what you were spelling out there that's happening in places.
Thank you for your testimony. I'll call now Paul Claren. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, Chair Boone, Vice Chair Callum, members of the committee. I'm Paul Claren with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I have several comments to make about the bill as it is written. The bill refers to the Ocean Resources Management Plan. We had some questions about that this morning. A brief history lesson. The plan is something that was mandated by the legislature to be developed back in the late 80s, and it prescribed for the legislature and for the state how it might go about managing its ocean resources, both within the territorial sea and without. The plan itself does not contain any state authorities. It doesn't require state agencies to do anything. It doesn't set standards. It is not an implementing type of plan. Okay, it's just a descriptive plan. And by having this piece of legislature focus on the plan would not get you what you want. It is the territorial sea plan that actually contains the implementing functions for state agencies. They refer to the territorial sea plan. They're required under ORS 196 already to refer to the territorial sea plan. So if you want to go back into this bill and start amending it, that's where you should start. You should not refer to the Ocean Resources Management Plan, but to the Territorial Sea Plan. Also in the bill, as it is currently written, it talks about the Ocean Resources Management Program, which is distinctly different than the plan, incorporates the plan and the Territorial Sea Plan and some other elements. So there is some confusion in ORS 196, as it is currently written, that leads to the sort of comments you're getting from people about what does this mean? What does it do? And I think you have an opportunity here to fix some of that. I will note that currently in ORS 196.443, where it refers to, as you mentioned, Representative Krieger, the reference to OPAC, which is the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, not committee, make recommendations to ODFMW Commission. It, again, refers to recommendations to change the Ocean Resources Management Plan, which will is not something that ODFMW does. So you would need to, at the same time, look at that. You may want to consider changes there as well. So that's primarily my concern with this particular bill as it is written. It's not going to get you what you want. It refers to some of the archaic artifacts of ocean resources management planning that have gone on over the decades, and you have an opportunity now to perhaps fix some of that. I'll leave my comments there.
Thank you, and I apologize for the misstatement that it's the council.
Representative Schaffer.
If I wasn't confused before, I believe I am now, but just so
it's confusing.
If I can ask a question and show my ignorance here, too. So, for example, if for some reason someone interpreted this, let's say hypothetically this became the law as it's written, and someone interpreted as banning the operation of boats through these areas, that would not go underneath the enforcement of fish and wildlife. That would come out of the plan that you're referring to. Is that correct?
The plan doesn't have any enforcement.
There's nothing there.
There's nothing there. It's a descriptive document. It sets up the conceptual framework for doing ocean management planning in the state. It was drawn up specifically for the legislature back in 1992, I believe, 91. And the legislature used that to develop the Territorial Sea Plan, which is then what state agencies refer to actually manage. Okay, so that's where the rubber hits the road.
Madam Chair, then follow up for a request. Then we represented the Chair Boone requested the bills that Representative Krieger was referring to. I probably have a copy of this plan somewhere, but I'd like to read that too. So once our able staff get on that, just take for me, please.
That's a more than a half hour read, Mike, but it's good.
Yeah.
I like it.
Madam Chair, just yes, clarification, you want a copy of the Territorial Sea Plan?
On everything that's been referred to.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah, they're all on our website if you would like to
get
them online. Go to DLCD, the Coastal Program, and you'll find the Ocean Resources Management Plan, the Territorial Sea Plan, and Goal 19. If you look at the ORS 196 as it is currently written under 196.485, you'll find that requirement for state agencies to refer to the Territorial Sea Plan and to Goal 19 when they're making their decisions, not to the Ocean Resources Management Plan. Okay. So there are some inconsistencies in ORS 196 as it is currently written.
Let me rephrase my request then. All the items he just referenced, email them to me, and then I can get them off the Internet.
Yeah.
Because I'm scribbling as fast as I can here.
And I will probably add the links directly in the text to the bottom.
That would be wonderful.
Very helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm wondering how big my filing cabinet needs to be by the time we're done.
I think the biggest file, Madam Chair, I've got now is on Marine Reserve since I've been here. I mean, there's several boxes. When you start taking in all the letters and emails and stuff that has come, a lot of concern about the issue and a lot of misunderstanding about maybe where we were trying to go and the reasoning why we were trying to go there.
Okay.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Clarence, I'm assuming that y'all have defined what these marine resources are. You have a definition?
You mean the living and non-living, as referred to in the bill. Those are referred to numerous times in the Territorial Sea Plan.
So there is a definition existing somewhere. Okay.
Right, and essentially, living means all the biota, the fisheries, the benthic habitat, all that. The non-living is the minerals. And again, when the Ocean Resources Management Plan and the Territorial Sea Plan were both conceived, the primary issue that we were dealing with was oil and gas and mineral extraction. So the non-living refer to those types of things.
That's what I've been concerned about.
Exactly. And everything, the fisheries, also the benthic, also the biota, those are the living organisms, which are specifically what are being protected in the Territorial Sea Plan.
Okay. Do we have any other questions for Mr. Clarin? Thank you very much for that clarification. I think it helped, or else it only confused me more. I'm not sure which, but I'm glad that we'll have reference the documents for reference. It is difficult to find everything we're trying to talk about. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
John Griffith. And I guess as Mr. Griffith is coming up, I should say welcome aboard. Officially now you have received your appointment to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council.
That's correct.
Congratulations, John.
Thanks, Debbie. Vice Chair Conlon, members of the committee, I'm John Griffith, newspaper figure, and glad to see the legislative interest in this topic. As Representative Boone said, there's a terrific amount of interest just over the hill. A couple of things. I agree with the previous speaker on the difference Oregon, the Ocean Resources Management Plan and the Territorial Sea Plan. Territorial Sea Plan is supposed to be like very specific. In fact, in 2002, when House Bill 3534 from the 03 session was getting worked on, it was so specific, in fact, and adopted over all the testimony that they heard on the coast, that the intent was to just toss it. And in compromising, it was agreed that it would still be in ORS, but the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, which I'll hereafter refer to as OPAC, was supposed to delete all the site designations and management prescriptions. And that's specific command in ORS at 196.443. That hasn't happened yet, so one of the amendments I'd suggest in the LC, and I know you're going to work on it, so I don't expect to get them all today, would be at on page 3, line 14, replace the period at the end of the word commission with a comma, and then add after that, quote, and the Land Conservation and Development Commission shall adopt those deletions. Now, that, of course, would sort of fly in the face of part of the intent of 3534, where in the old days, OPEC which in the old days didn't even have Senate confirmation, if it recommended an amendment to the territorial sea plan and LCDC adopted it, all other state boards and agencies had to amend their OARs, which was just the law flipped on its head. I mean, why would you go through the ORS 183 process of adopting rules when you already know the outcome of the hearing? I mean, that's kind of an insult to the public who shows up, and it's certainly an insult to the say Fish and Wildlife Commission, Marine Board, people like that. So I would recommend that those deletions occur now like the way they're supposed to have since 2003. Where it says lasting and protection, I have a sort of an opinion on that, I guess, because I surf and dive. There's nothing lasts out there, nor can it be protected from the 99.9% of the stress which comes from the weather, El Nino, La Nina. A friend who was a sea urchin diver found a rock that was like 30 feet across in 40 feet of water, flipped over after the 1999 storm that put the new Carissa on the beach. And there's just enough power out there that the reason he knew it is he was on a contract to produce red abalone for ODFW, and he knew where they were, so he went to his rock, and there was nothing there on the top except abalone, when ordinarily they're under the rock. So then he looked under the rock, and all the sea life and the plants were on the bottom. They wouldn't grow, of course, on the bottom, but for the fact that the rock had been flipped over. So those are just terms like protection, you can't protect it, and lasting, I got that. I do a search and replace anywhere where you see benefits and replace it with effects. There's nothing but doubt that they produce any effect at all designating Marine Reserve, and deep, dark doubt that they produce anything that would be a benefit. And moreover, humans define benefits and harm. The animals just deal with whatever we do. So, I mean, is it a benefit? Yeah, by whose? And maybe a fisherman might find a benefit that a sport diver wouldn't. So I would just on general principle, replace benefits with effects. At the beginning of it, the language, I guess at section one, I do like what you see in the predator and noxious animal section. I think it's ORS 610 or something. And you'd have language to the effect of nothing in this section preempts other authorities of Oregon boards and commissions, like Fish and Wildlife, Marine Board. Email from my carrier, it's that nine or fewer. I sort of like that. It's an acrimonious enough process over there. It's going to be uphill to get even a couple the way it is right now, unless the people have some sort of connection or ownership to whatever produced. I think they're just going to fight it. So the number nine I'm not too hung up on, but I do believe I should point out there's already over a dozen reserves, marine gardens, habitat areas and stuff on the coast now, and you can just look at the back of the fishing rule synopsis for that. Almost all of them were designated by ODFW prior to 1970. Another in Mr. Carrier's email, he writes in that first long paragraph, it would encumber a number of existing management actions, including such designation as no trawls areas and essential fish habitat. There's no trawling in the territorial sea now, except for a couple of square miles of sandy bottom up by the Columbia River. Those were done just fine without the discussion of marine reserves by ODFW and what's called the Pacific Fisheries Management Council. So since we don't have any trawling there now, and they've been doing it all along, I wouldn't be too worried about that. Let's see, I think that's about it for what I had thought of over the time I've had to look at this. Do you have any questions for me, please?
Thank you. Representative Shoffler.
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Griffith, I've never met you, but thank you. I've heard a lot about you, and I'm glad the governor's put you on this committee. But I wasn't quite sure, you know, from what all I've heard about you, I share some of your concerns, and believe me, I'm very concerned about this language. So, but I wasn't sure if you were going to show up sporting horns and a tail or a halo for all the conversations I heard about you. But I do welcome you here, and I'm glad you're on the committee, and I you represent those people. They've chosen you, and I'm glad you're on there. So just wanted to just make that comment, sir.
Thank you. With all due respect, Representative Shoffler, I have known Mr. Griffith for quite some time, and I don't think that either horns or halo would be appropriate.
Maybe closer to horns.
Any other questions for Mr. Griffith? Did you have a closing comment here? You looked like you were halfway ready to leave, but you wanted to say something.
Yeah, Vice Chair Cowan. No, if you're done with me, I got to get over to AOC. You know who they are.
I've met them somewhere along the way. Thank you.
I just wanted to thank John for his input on this, and I hope it will be okay if I talk with you again on some of the questions, because you deal a lot of history, especially down in that South Coast area, which I'm not as familiar with. I am up the Upper Coast, Upper Left Coast.
Madam Chair, one of the things that if you start working with John, you're going to find out, he probably knows a lot of the statutes better than our state agencies do. You're going to find out he spends hours and hours on Saturday and Sunday in his office in Coquille doing research. And Coos County doesn't provide a vehicle for the county commissioners, nor any transportation costs. So everywhere that he's gone on OPAC for the last 5 years, motels, food, and everything is out of his wages. So he's been dedicated to this a long time, and I'm hoping that where someone, I think, has, like, to a point been demonized by certain people, you're going to find out, hey, you know, and I think Representative Shoffler, you and I have learned that lesson well the last couple of years working together. Sit down, have a cup of coffee, respect someone else's differences, and talk about them. Communicate. And if we do that properly, we'll probably work through this situation just like we have with other difficult issues.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I just wanted to check to see why Representative Krieger said he worked on this for his 5 years in the legislature. Didn't he forget he'd been here 7?
Well, I don't know.
Well, Madam Chair, what happened was we didn't really get into it until 2003.
Just curious.
It kind of sat there. It was on the back burner, but
I remember it from that first year.
Well, what's interesting, the other night I was watching a program on Greek mythology, and I hadn't read a lot of it. A griffin?
Uh-huh.
You ever heard of a griffin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people think he's a griffin. He's not a griffin.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on LC 89? If not, before we move into work session, I'd like to make a couple of comments in terms of what I've heard here today, too, and then I would also like to give Chair Boone an opportunity. First and foremost, I think it's important for this committee that Representative Krieger mentioned that we respect the differences. I represent a district with individuals who have a variety of opinions on this issue. They are all living, working, and surviving or trying to in a coastal community. And those affected people in our communities have strong feelings on both sides of the challenging conversations that we're having about marine protected areas and their desire to protect a natural environment that we all hold very dear. So I think I just want to charge this committee that as we move forward, we do our best to represent the economic pieces of our sport and commercial fishing industries, we also have to recognize the meaning of the word socioeconomic and the importance to others about our social responsibility for protecting our environment, too. I am completely supportive of the need to do good scientifically based research, to know what we need to do and to know how we need to continue it. But we must remember that our coastal communities, not everyone speaks up with one voice as well, and it's our responsibility to look at both of them. So, that being said, I would maintain that a number of ideas have been fleshed out here. I know that Representative Boone was undoubtedly taking notes on her end. And,
5 pages.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's slow.
So I think we need to take those comments into consideration, and as we work this bill forward, I don't personally feel that it would be appropriate to try to move amendments into the LC concept at this point, and that we should, as I said before, do that during the session. And let's try to remember that what we're trying to do with this bill is to establish a viable role for the legislature in this whole process, and to work collectively with the Ocean Policy Advisory Council, which has been working this issue for a long time as well. Representative Boone, do you have...
Yeah, I do. Very well said, Representative Callan, and I so appreciate you bringing that up, because that's a very nice way to segue into the work session. We all, and I'll say we, our Coastal Caucus members, represent a variety of opinions in our districts, and it's incumbent on us to represent all of our constituents. And so that makes it a bit of a delicate dance, if you will. And along with that, we have our governor and our agencies and other people who work in state government and federal as well as local government. We have all these people together representing a variety of permutations of our constituents. And I am very energized by this discussion today and the way it's been going, because this is a huge issue. Not just marine reserves or protected areas, but the ocean. I mean, not trying to be a pun at all, it is huge, but it's very important. And we are really on the cutting edge in Oregon of so many things, and I would really love it if we could continue that motion forward in our ocean policy planning and implementation of whatever we do, that it's scientifically vetted and adequate discussion and involvement by people who are going to be affected potentially by any kind of changes, whatever they might be, in such a way that they all have a seat at the table, they all have an opinion that will be listened to and respected. And no matter what ends up in the final solution, that people can walk away with it and know that it was done fairly and thoroughly. And that's the part that's going to be tough, because we don't have a lot of time. But I think that if we look at it as a work in progress and work it that way, and if things need to change one way or the other as we move forward, that we all have as Representative Krieger says, a nonpartisan, it's these hard to find the words for it, what I'm trying to say, but I think that if we do that, and we're all looking at the same thing, we all use and love the ocean in our own way, and I think we all want to protect it and make sure that it's going to be there for us to use and love and enjoy in however we do. The one thing that we really need to be careful of is putting something in front of somebody else that's going to hinder them, for example, their livelihood, a coastal socioeconomic impact that would damage the community. And I think that's why I saw with pleasure the words in the governor's letter, the November 1st letter, to the fishing community he wrote when they came to visit him, that he would, you know, and I know OPAC's been charged with some of the language as they put forward policy to him, that they don't damage these things, that they don't harm people's livelihoods and coastal communities' economic bases, et cetera. Because I'm here to tell you, even though a dead fish can smell, people come to the coast, they want to go down on your fishing dock, Jeannie and Wayne and mine up in the Astoria Warrenton area, and they want to see those boats coming in. They love watching them come in. There's nothing more exciting than watching that. And that's all part of this. So I'm looking forward to a healthy and vigorous discussion as we move forward, and I appreciate your trust, committee, and others for helping us move this forward in such a way that we can get down to work. We always intended to have this document be a little bit broad so that it could be worked by those who are involved. And now that as we move forward on this process and OPAC moves forward on its outreach program, I'm just very excited about ending up with a really great product in the end. And I thank you all.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any other comments before I close the public hearing and move to work session?
Just briefly, Madam Chair. I hope we do have as non-controversial and as little angst as possible in the thorough vetting of this language. But, you know, reserve, what does it mean? I hope it means protecting a species or species in the plural and the resource. But I do, and if there are certain special areas that we definitely should never go into again for whatever reason, and I don't mean not going over it with a boat, I definitely want the people out there on the coast to have the heaviest weighted opinion on where those areas are. But I do not see this as blocking off huge swaths of the ocean forever. What are we reserving? We're reserving areas to protect species and the resource that we all use and enjoy. That's how I see this. So hopefully we can get there from here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, seeing no other comments, I'm going to close the public hearing, and I would now like to open a work session on LC 89.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krieger.
I move that LC 89 be recommended for introduction at the February 28 special session.
Representative Krieger moves that LC 89 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session. Is there discussion?
A little.
Representative Krieger.
You have heard everyone who's testified today, pretty much every member sitting up here, that's a representative, a lot of concern about not only the content of this bill, but the whole issue. So we're going to make sure we understand this isn't the bill in itself. There will be amendments and a process of getting there. It will be a lot of work.
Thank you. Representative Nielsen?
Yes, Madam Chair. there's no way that I would want to introduce this to the legislature. I mean, I think it's so inadequate and inappropriate, and I think the research and, like Debbie was saying, the thoroughness of having prepared something, this to me is the beginning of a recipe, and, you know, we wouldn't put it in the cookbook like this, so I couldn't vote to introduce it.
Representative Shopper?
Thank you. I'll be supporting this introduction. I remember when I first found out that LCDC was involved in this, I rolled my eyes. Oh, my God, we're going to zone the ocean, too. But I think there's actually a good parallel there when it comes to farming. Sometimes you plow up this season, you plant something next season, another, and then the third, you may let the ground lay fallow. I think that's a good analogy here, and because you want to protect your resource. And then, as we found throughout time, that some areas are marginal, and they're maybe better for our community to have a wetland there. And so we don't even plow them up anymore. That's my angle here, my perspective, my approach to this. But once again, I'm going to keep banging this drum. The legislature and the governor, we're going to give some money to do this, and we have to have very serious input and oversight But the heavy weighted opinion has to be, in my humble opinion, coming from the people out there that are most directly impacted, and that's the folks that live and work on the coast, and in respect to every one of their opinions out there, regardless of where they are on this. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you. I don't know, I must be suffering from some mental problem today, but, you know, there's not one section in this draft that we didn't go through that needs work.
Yes,
I mean, this is so unreal to me. Why would we introduce something that is so inadequate? And then you go to Section 6. I should say everything. Every section needs correction except Section 6. It says this is an emergency and this act will take effect on its passage. I'm going to ask Representative Krieger to, well, once again, I guess, explain why we want to introduce something that is so inadequate and wrong and incomplete and does not do what, you know, the coastal people or the rest of us who use the ocean or work there want it to do. It's just crazy to me.
Representative Krieger.
I think, Representative Nelson, this, what you're seeing isn't the bill. About 99% of this is going to go away because nobody on this committee that I know of is going to vote for it. So that gives us an opportunity to be talking to both the environmental community, the fishing community, our county commissioners, be an opportunity to talk to John a little bit more about some of his visions that he hasn't been able to get out before OPAC, about where we need to go. So the amended bill, it's going to be almost like a gut and stuff is what it's going to be. And we're not going to pass it out of here now. We're not going to pass it out during the special session unless it does the things that we want to get done. And we've got a fair framework within 3534 already, but there are a few places we might be able to strengthen it and have some clarity, and that would be an opportunity to do that. So that's why I'm going to support the concept. It's like a placeholder bill. It's going to be there, and if we need it, we'll get it done.
Thank you. I'd like to jump in here, and then I'll recognize you again. I would like to throw my comments in as well as to why I am going to support this bill as a concept. And the reason is that I think that we need this as a vehicle, that we need a vehicle to bring the, as I've mentioned several times here today, the role of the legislative body into this conversation. We know that the process is moving forward through the OPAC conversations and through other drivers, that there is work in progress, and we also know that we need to find a tool to stem some of the fears and reassure our communities, frankly, on both sides of this issue. And I feel strongly that we don't have a clear enough role for the legislative process in the conversation at this point. So I will be supporting this as a vehicle for establishing that role for the legislature. And I will recognize Representative Nelson one more time, and then I want to make sure that Chair Boone has an opportunity for comment before we take the vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I've been here four terms in this legislature, and I have never, ever passed in a committee something like this that is a bill saying, or a draft, or whatever we're going to call it, LC, saying that we're going to vote for 99% of this to be replaced. And we're just putting something out in the clear blue yonder. I don't think we're having another committee meeting before February session. So I just am astounded that we would present something like this that has 1% correct the data in it. And I'm just once again want to say I think we should, you know, certainly pursue this program and what needs to be done protecting our marine reserves and resources as defined in the territorial sea, whatever it's called, plan. And but not present something like this, I think it makes a mockery of us and our purpose here. So that's my opinion.
Chair Boone?
Well, I'll just speak to a couple of things there. Representative Nelson, we kind of got caught a little short in any case by the timing. And the fact, I think when I talked about the history of this, I tried to tie that together with OPAC. We're kind of on a parallel track with that. I tried to make this draft is existing law. It's existing OPAC policy. It's existing OPAC definitions in several cases that they're also working to fine-tune at the same time. And they haven't even had their first Territorial Sea Plan subcommittee meeting. That'll happen the end of February. So they are working on that at the same time. We will be working with them, and I know they won't have, we're going to probably have to have some side meetings with some of them too, because we don't want to wait till the end of February, of course. But the point of this is as Representative Krieger has outlined too, it's somewhat of a placeholder bill, but we needed it so that we could move on something. There's been some lack of trust in some of the process by which the whole process has been going forward for the last year plus on the coast, and this provided some reassurance to the coastal community residents that I agree with Representative Schaffler should have a huge say in all this, and they are asking for the legislature to take charge of this process and to have it vetted through them, because they feel that that's where they can get a fair vetting of their fair hearings and a fair discussion on this issue. And I think that that's something we needed to have in place to go forward to 2008. We know that this isn't complete because it's got people on all sides of it who still haven't had the chance to have the discussions. We haven't had, the stack has been in place, OPAC's Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee, Subcommittee has not completed their work, and they advise OPAC. OPAC's outreach program has not even started yet, but it will soon, and that's where they're going to be starting to collect the input from the people on the coast. And so it is a progress, it's a piece of the progress we have to have in place so that we're enabled to act legislatively as the people on the coast want us to do.
Thank you. With that, I think we'll bring this to the vote. Those of the opinion that LC 89 be recommended for introduction at the February 2008 special session will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Schaffer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cowan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Nelson?
No.
And Chair Boone?
Aye.
Here with on a 4-1 vote, the motion carries. Before I completely close this work session, I need some clarity. I had on my calendar kind of a question mark for another meeting of this committee towards the end of January. I'm turning to staff at this point to see what our intentions are.
Madam Vice Chair, committee members, yes, we had requested a tentative date on the 28th. However, we were having difficulty with folks being able to attend, and that is the absolute deadline for any pre-session filing. So Chair Boone felt that the two LCs that the committee is focusing on could be tended to today. Thus, they're at this juncture, unless the chair so indicates, I don't think that we'll be getting together again until February.
I think that's correct.
That was my guess, but I wanted to get that clarified.
Yeah.
Representative Krieger.
Vice Chair, even though we're not getting a together today, I think there's an opportunity between now and the 4th for all this we've heard today with staff and the chair getting together and confining this thing down to, hey, what are the things we want in this bill, and not wait till we get here.
Certainly.
Leadership of the committee can do that.
Yeah, most certainly. And I'm sure Chair Boone will be very open to
that. Absolutely, yes.
So, okay, thank you very much for your...
And at the ready to any of you, call me anytime, email me, whatever. I may not be standing, I take that back. I may be laying down, but that's okay. I'll still be talking to you.
She'll be there to be talk there. To you anyway, whether her back allows her to be upright or not. Okay. Anna, we wish you well and hope you
Thank
get
you.
To feeling like you can move again real soon.
Thank you. Thanks very much for everybody being there today and for everything. Thank you.
Thank you for your hard work with that. The
Happy New Year.
Yep.
Okay.
Now can I close it?
Thank you. All right, there we go. Thanks, Deb.
Okay, thank you, Deb.
Bye.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Thanks, Representative.
Thank you very much, Sandy.
And I'll get that stuff out, and you and I will hook up
we'll
tomorrow, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.